Welcome to Adventures in Marketing. I'm Caleb Wines.
And I'm Chris Kent. We're two industry veterans who will be having conversations all around marketing and media, what we've seen in our careers, what we see happening currently, and how we think it's going to affect the future of the industry.
As anyone who surfs the internet knows, clickbait is everywhere, and it's terrible. Today, Chris and I discuss this phenomenon and how it could possibly change in the future for a better ad experience. All right, Chris. So coming off our discussion on media and journalism, I was thinking about how clickbait has really ruined the internet for users. It's really just terrible how you're surfing stuff for information and then you get served up these terrible, terrible headlines that, and you could almost, it's almost like Mad Libs. It's like, I did fill in the blank and this happened, forcing the user to click to find out what that is. And to be honest, I'll give like a company like BuzzFeed all the credit in the world. They kind of established that paradigm, in my opinion. Maybe there was other ones out there, but they made a whole business out of it. But now it's really just gotten out of control from a user standpoint. Like even when I'm, you know, surfing YouTube or whatever, all the content creators are using clickbait to get you to watch their video. And it's for good reason. That's how they get paid. You know, if you're publishing content, whether it's just on the internet or YouTube in particular, you need users to open your link so the ads could be served. And that's how you as a content creator get paid. What are your thoughts?
Look, I agree with you 100%. I hate it. I think it's really watered down the quality of content. I shouldn't say the quality of content, because maybe content is good, but the quality of what stands out and how you actually find it. But again, if you go back to let's just make it very simple, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and we didn't have the internet. And the biggest thing we had closest to the internet would have been magazines, right? They came to you pretty much monthly. And you were a captured audience. Whether you had good creative, bad creative, good headline, bad headline, whoever got the magazine saw your creative. Now the problem is with the internet, you've basically opened up a floodgate of content providers, of advertisers, of just possible ways to reach people. And so you had to figure out a way to make your thing, your widget, your voice stand out above everybody else's. And so, yeah, you just keep getting a salacious headline, then even more salacious, then even more salacious, and gets to the point where it's just so over the top. But the problem is if all you said was the actual some sort of real headline, probably not getting any clicks because no one's going to really notice it and it's not going to stand out.
That's exactly right. I think if you look at something like the Wall Street Journal, one of the ways that I used to consume that is I'd read the headlines. I'd read the little summary below it. And if I wanted to read more, I could, but often I didn't because I got enough of the gist of the story just from the headline. And that was great. And you brought up magazines. I think, you know, I like to cook. So I think when I used to read like a Bon Appetit or a Gourmet or whatever, it was a great value exchange. Like I got to read all this content and digest the recipes, but it was interrupted with these ads, which actually weren't that bad. They actually were enhancing the experience. It was a great value exchange. Now, like if I want to go look at a recipe online from some random content creator, it's always the same. It's like literally I can't even count how many ads are there. And they have every single one of the recipe links has a jump to recipe button at the very top. Otherwise you'd have to scroll until you got arthritis in your hand to try and get to the recipe. And so I think if you hit the jump to recipe button, it literally scrolls manually but fast. So all those ads pop and they get paid because some ad server counted that as an exposure, which is terrible.
Yeah, absolutely horrible.
And so sometimes like it'll slow down and kind of scroll back up and a video will pop. It's terrible. So, I mean, now I'm pretty much paying like New York Times. We talked about it on a couple episodes ago. But I'm paying like New York Times, which, by the way, still does serve ads, even though I have an annual subscription. But it's not that many. and also America's Test Kitchen, which has no ads. And so I pay money for those, and that's where I go for my recipes. Unless they don't have what I'm looking for, then I have to go to the web. There's only a couple other places that are not individual content creators that are, and a lot of, they get their content. They're not coming up with these recipes. They're, yeah. It's the same recipe over and over and over again. They just give it different names, and there's a lot of clickbait talking about how it's the best and all this other stuff. And, you know, or they'll throw something in the headline and then it won't get paid off in the actual content. It's terrible.
No, I get it. I'm also though going to put blame on the other side of that coin, being the creators or the brands hire performance agencies. A performance agency is going to get paid based on how well they perform. And a lot of times they're the ones who are, you know, just cycling through dynamic creative optimization. If I take headline A, visual B, call to action C, and I do 3D chess and I go through, you know, 1,000 of each one of those articulating A plus B plus C and all these different variations, you're going to find rabbit holes that work. And so you stop and you let people, you know, you see how long clicks drive on that. And the problem is that curve is just going to get harder and harder and harder to keep going. So you have to keep getting kind of like a little bit wilder, a little bit more salacious. So in a weird way, coming out of advertising and having these performance-driven agencies is also partly to blame, because I'm hiring you to do performance. And so if you're going to get hire me to do performance, I've got to prove I can do it. So I'm going to pull many different levers to get that performance, that cost per whatever, as low as I can. So I'm making up the delta in profit.
The snake eats its tail.
It's true.
Well, let's go back a second. Let's take the Wayback Machine. and let's go back to the dawn of internet advertising. And so if you recall, when display ads were a thing and said, oh my God, click rates are like 10%. 15%. Yeah. And the websites that were selling their space saying, we can finally now track and show performance, like unlike print, mm-hmm. or unlike, you know, radio or broadcast, any of the traditional media that had been used for decades, they were coming in. It's like, clicks are the way, because now I could, you know, track how many people you see. And it was a huge number. I mean, 10% of people clicking on an ad, that was like crazy. But
yeah,
it quickly went down. And I think the biggest problem from my standpoint was that they latched, the digital advertising community latched onto clicks as their currency. And then I think now they've kind of pivoted, say, no, it's really about views and impressions. Because again, back then it was difficult to price, because, you know, people were talking about, is it a cost per click? Is it a CPM like we do for broadcasts? You know, how are we going to monetize this thing? And I think it goes back to any other medium. It's like you get exposed to an ad. Now we can track, you know, things like an MMM and other multi-touch attribution. You can actually track these various sources, even offline ones, that allow a more holistic view of how your media plan is performing and not necessarily rely on a single measurement like clicks, which is a waste, because, I mean, 99.9% people don't click. It's terrible. But I think the models out there, people are still reporting on clicks. They're still reporting on views, even though there's no engagement, because as we just talked about, and as you just mentioned, a lot of the performance media, these ads go by so fast, but they count towards they get served and they count as an impression. So now you're looking for things like view through. And I don't know how effective some of those display ads are at driving people to some sort of conversion metric, whatever your KPI is, if you're not even seeing it. And it's almost happened. I mean, you have to be served so many impressions, you know, before you're, as a consumer, get motivated to actually perform some sort of a KPI.
I agree, but this, in a weird way, the problem we're talking about is, as you know, I have a funny little saying that goes, no one ever got fired for buying TV, but nowadays you probably should, right? Because we have people in roles who have been in the roles for too long, to your point, they don't understand what else is happening. Like, they might not completely understand TikTok and whatnot. And so then they have an extra $1 million. They're like, oh, just go buy more TV. Because at least I know what that is and I'll see it on CBS or whatever the hell they're watching. But I think it goes back to what people understand. People will always buy what they can understand. And so if you're at an agency trying to sell this new thing called the internet, which the clients are probably asking you, how do we do this? How do we monetize it? Essentially how clients are asking today about TikTok or gaming or whatever new thing that's coming. And clicks was an easy answer. It's everybody understood what it was. Oh, you mean my little arrow goes over it and I click on it. That's what you're counting. Yes, that's what we're counting. Or the fact that the banner came up. Okay, that's an impression. Well, I get what an impression is because I've been buying TV for a long time and I understand, even though impressions are nebulous, they can say, at least I understand what an impression is and it's easier for them to latch onto. So I just think I think we just did a really bad job in the beginning of selling ourselves short and then getting stuck on nomenclature that everything progressed, we're still kind of stuck with.
Yeah, they hooked their wagon to the wrong towing vehicle.
It's true. You know,
I worked with somebody years ago when I was on Hyundai back at Initiative, and one of the clients wanted to do a click only. That all they wanted was clicks. And she was saying, look, then we should only do Punch the Monkey creative, where right. The cursor turns into a little boxing glove and you try to try and so you accidentally force a click to happen, even though you have no desire to go to that company's website. And it was so funny. I remember we ended up having to succumb and do this click plan. And what happened was, as you could imagine, we got the bounce rate was out of control.
Exactly.
The only thing that went up besides we did get more website traffic, but the number one action taken was bouncing.
Right, because you've built your creative for a call to action that was just to click, and you weren't really qualifying how you want, what people you wanted or why they should be clicking.
Well, in this case, it wasn't even really about the creative. I think we were actually taking the same creative, but what we changed the media plan to optimize to the behavior of clicks. So we rewarded consumers for clicking on the ad. We got people who were good at clicking, not people who were buying cars. And so I think that was the learning from that experiment. And fortunately, we ended up pivoting back to things like optimizing to KPIs, shopping KPIs that make sense for, you know, hey, we get somebody who's come to the website, they've navigated the website, they started going to things like payment calculator and dealer lookup. Hey, that's who I want to follow and retarget. I don't want to retarget that guy that landed on our website and bounced. In fact, I joked at one point, I said, our target audience is bots, because bots are the most effective target audience at clicking on ads and going to a website and then bouncing. So I said, if we could find bots as a target audience, we'd be very effective at converting our clicks. But it's terrible. I mean, I think it goes back to, you know, what we talked about in terms of the value exchange. Like, let's talk about streaming, because we've talked about streaming quite a bit on these discussions. And it's actually, they've actually figured it out. Like, if you think about it, a lot of streamers have a lot lighter ad load than the traditional broadcast networks. And so you, even though you get interrupted with advertising, it's a lot less. And I actually don't mind it as a consumer, like, because I'm used to it. It's like, it goes back to that value exchange. It's like, hey, you're going to interrupt me with a couple minutes of ads. I'll tell you who messes things up is Netflix. Because they do have a cheaper, or less expensive, I should say, less expensive subscription plan that has ads. Yep. Like, I pay for the top one for one single reason. Only the top one allows you to get their 4K broadcast. The ad-supported one, it's less money, but it's also inferior quality content for my big screen in my living room. So I would gladly pay less money and be subjected to ads, but I can't on that platform because of the ad stuff. I mean, Amazon just switched over to an ad-supported model. They do have a more expensive one that allows you to not have ads, but I'm happy paying my regular Prime. I don't have to give them any more money. And so I'm happy to watch a few ads every once in a while. Same thing with Hulu, same thing with Disney. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, in a weird way, we're kind of stepping now into FAST models, right? Free ad-supported television models.
Yep, exactly.
To use your, you know, Amazon, it's why they have Freevee, right? Freevee has great content on it, but it comes with ads. Then you can step up to your Prime, and there's a, you know, more expensive version of Prime.
It's Tubi's whole business model.
It is. Or there's another company called Amagi who builds out FAST networks for brands and television networks. But it's the right stepping stone model, right? You have a free ad-supported television at the bottom, whether that's Tubi, whether that's Freevee, you know, whatever that happens to be. You then upload them, or you tier them up to that next level where they're paying maybe a little bit more and getting slightly less but better quality. And then the top tier being, hey, now you've got everything at the highest quality and no ads, but you're paying for it. So in that case, to your point, they've built a beautiful model, which is like a triangle, the broadest base being your, you know, free ad-supported TV, then going into a slightly pay with some ads to no ads and quality going up as you go. I agree. I have the highest one of Netflix as well, just because I have inertia. It works for me and I just haven't gotten rid of it. But I watched something recently on Prime, but technically it was through Freevee, even though it was on Prime. And so to your point, it came up, it showed me two ads at the very beginning. And now that you watch two ads, here's your movie. I remember that was, I watched Poor Things, whatever, whether it was on Peacock, was on Prime, whatever it was. But they said, they showed me two ads and then they're like, Right. Okay, here's your movie. I'm like, okay, I'll pay for that. I mean, pay in quotes, my time. That was worth it to me. That was a fair exchange.
Yeah. And going back to the magazine example, it's like, yeah, there was a subscription price or there was a cover price if you brought a single issue, but nobody had a problem navigating that content, even though there was ads and there was a pay thing. So I kind of feel like the subscription model from a streaming standpoint is looking a lot more like how the print model was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, or it still exists today, but obviously less of a factor. But yeah. I mean, I still think that it goes back to, you know, you got to have good content, and some of these content creators are not putting out great content. And so I don't want to be subjected to terrible ads when I'm, when I'm consuming that stuff. But I do feel like, how do we fix this? I mean, to me, it has to be like, there has to be a good ad experience. I think like, let's take a big content provider like ESPN, right?
Sure.
Like that's a play. It's a destination, especially now during March Madness or any other sporting event where you're, you know, the pre-NFL draft. There's tons of articles, tons of scores, reasons to go back. There should be an opportunity. And I think they do a fairly good job. You know, there should be ads that get interspersed into the content, but not in an intrusive way. Because I think part of the problem that I've always had with kind of digital advertising is that you're constantly pop-ups come up and there's other, it's not the ads sit alongside the content versus interrupting it like you would in say a magazine or a broadcast on television. So it, like I said, I think people are okay with the value exchange. You and I are okay with it. I think it's like, if you have like content and then you take a break, you run some ads, then you go back to the content. The problem with digital advertising, it's literally side by side. So you have like banners on the top, banners on the side, banners on the bottom while you're reading this content. It's annoying. I'd rather have them, you know, intersperse the content with ads and then go back to the content. And I know some publishers are doing this. It's not everybody. I'm not trying to, but I think the vast majority, especially on those terrible, terrible recipe ads, like or the recipe content that I was mentioning, it's like a collage.
No, I agree with all that, but I think the other part of this equation, part of the problem is the programmatic side. Programmatic, you don't know who's buying your inventory. You don't know how much they're paying for it. Yes, you set floors, don't get me wrong, but you don't know who's, if you don't sell your out of your inventory, let's just make it very simple. If ESPN and let's just make it Lexus doesn't buy up all the inventory and you've got leftover inventory, which all these sites do, what do? They dump them down into a Xandr or a Trade Desk, a DV360, who then put it out to bid. And when your bid starts at, let's just say, a quarter, well, until it gets up to, let's say, a dollar, there's a lot of brands that you've probably never even heard of that are just looking to find clicks anywhere they can. And ESPN might not be the best site for them, might be like, I don't know, 10th or 15th on their list, but at the cost. And if someone clicks, it's worth it for them. And so your point, how do you fix it? That's the Wild West. Yes, it's not going to get you any quote unquote adult content or blacklisted content, but it doesn't mean you're going to get the best content or the right content to actually that people want to see. But now you're doing it because of economics.
Yeah, I remember one time we were reviewing the detail of a programmatic buy, just to your point, and just there was all these manga sites on there. It's just like, is this the right place for us to be? And I was kind of thinking about, it's like, maybe, but not at this level. It was just so much. And it was because of the price. It was because the machine learning optimized to that low price impression. Maybe there was definitely some other premium things in the report from a programmatic standpoint. I mean, I always say, like, look, evaluate programmatic based on your KPIs. If you have a performance-based KPI that is about interacting with your brand or even shopping metrics and it's paying off, just ignore all those terrible impressions that are not paying off. Because if the cost value relationship, you know, works, we were having a discussion the other day about social, and social is something you do. It's community management. It's interacting with your base. It's also running ads on platforms. And unless you're customizing the ads, if you're running the same ad as you are in other display, in other programmatic, then you should hold it to the same accountability from a performance standpoint. If Meta or TikTok or whatever is performing worse than your programmatic buy for those KPIs, then maybe you need to revisit your allocations.
I know it's an example, but I mean, those two buckets should never even be in the same conversation in terms of performance because of how differently they act and what you need to do, you know, creatively. But going back to your point though, about the programmatic and you getting on, let's just use manga as an example. Theoretically, you have a target audience there that the machine thinks you want based on what you put in, and it found some people there. So it targeted them to see, did they click? Did they not click? Now, let's just say it performed really, really well. You might not think you want your brand there, but if it performed and it actually sent a bunch of people who actually went through and bought your product, it's a learning. It's something for you to think about. Why I didn't think this was my audience. What is this audience? How did it perform? Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
You know,
but I don't think they're clicking. They're viewing the ad and then they're doing something else. And then if they end up back at your website or doing whatever KPI you've deemed successful at managing the media, then great. And it could work. And like you said, it could be a discovery, like, oh, maybe this content is resonating with a portion of my audience. We could talk about this like forever, but until they come up with a better ad experience that is trackable, we're going to just be in this same circular reference error where people are using clickbait to generate audience and views and whatnot. And it's terrible because, you know, I mean, the sad part is there's actually some really good content creators out there, but they have to jump in that game too, because if they want to grow, they need to grow their audience. And a proven way to do that, thanks to BuzzFeed and companies like them, is to create these salacious headlines that get people to click. And it's so sad because now and I just referenced ESPN as somebody that has a pretty normalized ad and content viewing experience. But even they have the headlines that make you want to go to their. So like, no, even the stalwart publishers are doing that. Even Wall Street Journal.
I mean, I thought when you said the most stalwart, you know, reporters out there, I thought you were going to say this podcast. Because, you know, we have our, you know, clicky headlines. I guess we don't do quite a good enough job.
I'm 100% going to put a clickbait headline for this episode. There has to be a better way. And, you know, it's funny because I do feel like that the, I said this earlier, but I do feel like that the streamers have kind of figured it out. Like it's a subscription that also introduces ads, and you're not relying on clicks, it's views. So yeah. I do feel like that is something that is, hey, wait a minute, there's something going on here where it's back to that value exchange that advertising has been built upon over the decades. I hope that publishers figure out a better way of communicating with their audience in a way that is both helpful to advertisers, but also celebrates the content. So maybe things like, you mentioned it on our last podcast, but things like, you know, Sports Illustrated and other places that people used to go to for the content. And now it's just part of the, you know, clickbait cesspool. It's terrible. Let's talk a little bit about some of the predictions that we made back at the beginning of the year.
Okay. I guess I'm willing to do that here at the ending of Q1.
Well, I'm only saying this because one of the things that we talked about, and I actually meant to bring it up on an earlier podcast, but I keep forgetting. I think you had a prediction about shoppable TV.
Correct. Yep.
So, and I thought that was a good one because that is something that I think gets people off of their laptops and off of their phones, presumably. And the one thing I wanted, because there has been for years, like QR codes where you could get a QR code and then it'll take you to a website and then you have to start the whole shopping. So when you said shoppable TV, I wasn't thinking that. I was actually thinking about using your remote control as an interface on the television and navigating the shopping experience without going to one of your other devices.
So I was saying both, right? Right now, for the game on Black Friday that Amazon had, they were putting up QR codes because they knew people had their phones next to them as an entry point to get people to start doing that. I would not be surprised, because I would think nowadays 90% of all TVs that get sold have built-in microphones, that it could be very simple for you to do something like Google Shop X, right? Because like I have a Google-enabled television. So it wouldn't surprise me if it went, to your point, more built into the actual controller as we progress down this road.
Well, I mean, there's people that are doing this now. I think it might still be in beta, but I saw something the other day where it was literally, it came up, it's like, do you want to buy this thing? And you click it, and it literally showed you a buy screen that it was, I think it was a partnership with Walmart, but it literally had, because you had already signed in, it already had all your details, including your address, your Walmart subscription, if you have one. And then, what was that little thing that popped up?
I don't know. All of a sudden, just so everybody at home, all of a sudden, in the middle of this conversation with Caleb, all of a sudden, he had this like little three bubble thought bubble appear above his head with a thumbs up in the middle of it that neither one of us actually activated. So maybe by you saying Walmart, Google, someone's listening.
Stupid AI. But anyway, it already had the shopping information and it showed you so it was like, if you had signed up for Walmart's free shipping service, it was already calculated. And so literally one button, it would send it to it would purchase it and send that product to your house.
But where were you storing? Where were you storing either the credit card information or your address information? Was it stored already on the TV, like inside the television itself somewhere in settings?
I think this was it was specifically the app content provider that had, you know, it's like, I'm sure there was a pop-up that said, hey, do you want to log into your, you know, log in via Google or log in via Facebook? It already has all your information from that single sign-on.
Yep.
You know, or you've agreed to provide that additional detail. So it could be that you had to provide it once, or it could have been that there was a separate sign-in page that you had to do to link your Walmart account or whatever. But once you did that, then you were like good to go.
Right. Right.
And then you could just purchase things as they popped up that made sense. And you just, oh yeah, I totally want that. I'm just going to, I'm sure the product examples they were giving were in that kind of 20 to 30 $10 range. So they were like, oh yeah, that I'll buy something off the TV. Like nobody's buying like a washer dryer off their TV.
Yeah. But to your point,
yeah.
I was saying, but to your point, that's where an Amazon could go. Well, like Google, I know, has already got Sony, because that's what I have. Amazon could go to Samsung and say, we want to be your shopping / AI operating system built into your every television that you sell. So when you go and you hang your Samsung on your wall and you go through the whole thing of, I live in California, I want English, and I'm, you know, Pacific time zone and blah, blah, blah. It could be, sign in here for your Amazon Prime account. And then as you go, it could just say, hey, you're watching, in your point, like for yourself, you're watching whatever, Bobby Flay cooking. He's making X. Would you like us to deliver all these things to you? We could have it to you by 5 o'clock today, or we could have it to you tomorrow at noon for you to cook as well. You know what I'm saying? Like they could really tie it in quickly.
Yeah, no, totally. And I don't know if you saw this, but like Walmart bought Vizio, or at least their ad product.
So now, I missed that.
Yeah. So now that they're incorporated into all those, or it will be, I mean, that recently just happened. And I don't know. I don't think they bought the whole TV company, but I'm pretty sure it was just the ad product. I could be wrong though. I need to go look into the details of that, but it clearly they are working on a shoppable TV product. Otherwise, why would they engage in that purchase? So
100%.
I mean, I do think that, you know, from a prediction standpoint, like you said, we're already like 3 months into the year, but that's something that's definitely happening.
Yeah. I mean, because television is literally just a window of content, right? Television, you choose what window of content you want to watch. You can choose what it is that you want to purchase through it. It's just a great vehicle because it's in everybody's home. Everybody's got multitudes of them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of advertisers that are video only.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, it's hard to argue with that when you consider the ad experience on the streaming platforms on the big screen. Like, obviously, you know, things like YouTube, the number one place to consume YouTube videos is on the big screen in your living room, right? Through their app.
Yep. Yep.
So, again, it's hard to fault advertisers that are taking a video first or a video only approach when you consider some of the other lower quality, both from a content standpoint and also a measurement standpoint, some of the other ads out there. I'm not saying get rid of it. It's still valuable and there's still ways. It's a lot harder for media people to navigate, but you can do it. To make sure that you're getting those quality impressions and a quality return on the investment. It's just harder.
Yeah. That's the fun of it.
Yeah. All right, Chris, anything else?
No, it's been a great discussion. I really have enjoyed this one.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, on to the next one.
On to the next one. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to like, listen, and follow us. We appreciate everybody for listening.